No time to rest for MMA fans as following the most historic weekend in the sport's history, we're hit with another major event with UFC 85 taking place this Saturday from the O2 Arena in London. So in this edition of the Week's End Update, we welcome once again Ben Folks of CagePotato.com and SI.com to help us look at the week that was and the weekend ahead in the world of mixed martial arts. What's going on, Ben?
Nothing much. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. Like I said at the top, we're coming off of a historic weekend, no doubt. It's probably, in my mind, the most historic weekend in the world, in the history of mixed martial arts. Would you agree with that statement?
You know, I think I would. Network TV debut is pretty huge.
Now, forgetting about the fact that, you know, the ratings did all well and all that, and we'll get to that in a second. All the backlash, all the you know, discussion following the especially the Elite XC show, especially online with a lot of heat that Gary Shaw and Elite XC has taken about, you know, whether it's fixing the fight or, you know, the early stoppages and all that. What is your take on the show in general? My you know, quick two cents was that I knew that it was Kimbo Slice going up against James Thompson. I wasn't expecting, you know, George St. Pierre against Matt Hughes. And I left the show feeling, okay, there's always going to be controversy, but all things considered, it was a pretty solid show. What was your take on it?
You know, I think there's really two ways to look at it. And one way that we have to keep in mind is the way the hardcore MMA fans, the MMA aficionados are going to look at it. And one thing I've learned about MMA aficionados writing about sport for a couple of years is that we're almost never happy with anything. So, of course, you know, there's plenty of stuff that we can find to criticize with Elite XC. And as you said, right, we knew what we were getting into there. We knew that it was James Thompson versus Kimbo Slice and that this was not a, you know, a top-tier main event. At the same time, you know, I like you, tried to keep my expectations low for Elite XC. And Ben Goldstein and I on KCO had kind of a debate back and forth as to whether or not the way they presented it on CBS would make us proud to be MMA fans, or whether, you know, we'd feel a little bad about it afterwards. The dancing girls, the smoke machines, you know, stuff like that that Elite XC seems so intent on doing, lends more credence to what I'm increasingly coming to believe is they are just interested in attracting a bunch of eyeballs really quickly, but not as interested in building up the sport legitimately. And James Thompson versus Kimbo Slice as a main event pretty much makes me think that's the case, that Elite XC is, you know, it's great that they got out there on network TV. They got a bunch of ratings. That's excellent. You know, it's great for MMA. That makes sponsors see that MMA is viable on network TV. But at the same time, what we saw, the actual show that we saw from them, it wasn't the caliber of product that the UFC is putting out. It just wasn't. And they don't seem to be bothered by that as long as they get the viewers. That's all they're about. And that's a little disturbing to me in the long run.
Now, on the flip side, don't you think there's something to be said with them taking the sort of ABA approach, being the ABA to the UFC's NBA or the AFL to the UFC's NFL, and in the fact that if they would have presented, or if they do continue to present a product that is very similar to that of the UFC's, they never would have gotten this type of exposure or this type of opportunity. So perhaps maybe, and I'm hoping this is the case, that they've used the gimmicks to land this spot and then hopefully, you know, kind of do right in the fans' eyes and put on a you know, honest and you know, a product that we can all be proud of. Do you think that maybe they just needed this sort of hook and these gimmicks to try to get on CBS, to try to get that big, you know, the major exposure, and then finally they'll kind of smarten up?
You know, I would like to believe that's the case. If we're going to make the sports league comparisons, I wouldn't say that they're the AFL to the UFC's NFL. They're the XFL, to the UFC's NFL. And I think the XFL comparisons, it's too early to make them, but already people are jumping on that. Like, the XFL had great ratings when they first started because they had enough gimmicks that people were like, all right, well, I'm going to tune in. I'm going to see what this is all about. I can remember watching the first weeks of the XFL. I can remember watching 0 weeks of the XFL after that first week. I'd like to believe that that's exactly what they're doing, is using these gimmicks to get on CBS, get some attention, kind of get on par with the UFC in some way, and then start trying to put on those fights. Nothing about things that Gary Shaw has said recently makes me believe or have faith that that is the case. I read an interview with AOL Sports recently where Gary Shaw was asked, where do you think Kimbo ranks in heavyweights in MMA? Gary Shaw, presumably with a straight face, said that, Kimbo needs some work on his ground game, he needs work on his cardio, but striking, I think he's number one. I think he's the best striker in the heavyweight division in MMA. Now, that statement is so completely false that one has to believe he either doesn't know enough about MMA to realize how wrong it is, or is just committed to saying whatever he wants to be the case and hoping that no one will call him on it. Either way, it's disturbing. Either way, you have a guy who, on one hand, maybe he doesn't know enough about the sport to really try and put together the solid cards. He'd rather whoever he can get on there that he thinks is going to attract attention for whatever reason, he'll do it. Or he's just going to tell us what he thinks we want and expect us to go along with it, which is also problematic.
First off, let me just say, if you stopped watching the XFL after week one, you missed a lot, because the million-dollar championship fight, that was riveting television. But on the topic of Gary Shaw, I spoke to him after the event, and I wish I would have asked him one question. I totally forgot to do it. Was, he came out and said that Scott Smith and Robbie Lawler were going to have a rematch. Obviously, that fight ended a little prematurely. No one was happy with the outcome. Is there any reason why James Thompson should not get a rematch as well? I mean, there's so much controversy, and he's trying to, go out there and do right and say that, we're here for the fans and all that stuff. And yet, everyone forgot, why isn't James Thompson getting a rematch? And I know why he's not. There's no money in the rematch. But are you surprised that no one's even bringing up this point that clearly Thompson was robbed, and yet he's not even going to get a rematch?
That's an interesting point, and I can see why you didn't bring it up in the interview. He seemed a little upset with you,
yes.
just for pressing on some of those issues. But, I think, as you said, we all know why it's not happening, and the reason we're not clamoring for it to happen is because we don't really want to see it. We just think it would be fair, and it would be fair if you're going to say that, Lawler Smith is a rematch, then yeah. You could say the same thing about Thompson and Kimbo Slice, but no one wants to see it. And so I think we've all kind of had this unspoken agreement, like, well, we realize this would be fair too, but, we're not going to bring it up. But what baffles me is when you have brought up, okay, why not have him fight Brett Rogers? Brett Rogers got out there, he knocked out James Thompson in the first round in his last fight, and then he comes in there and knocks out John Murphy in the first round of this fight, and then he calls Kimbo's performance garbage. I mean, that's tailor-made for, to put Kimbo up against Brett Rogers next. And Gary Shaw just says, Brett's going to have to learn it's about the money. I'm not sure that's a fight I would make. That makes no sense to me. That's completely baffling. The only way for me to make sense out of that is to say, well, Gary Shaw's afraid that Brett Rogers will beat Kimbo Slice, and he doesn't feel he can market Brett Rogers for some reason as well as he can Kimbo. And that's just the wrong way to approach it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because how can someone make the case that Brett Rogers makes less sense than Bo Cantrell, Tank Abbott, or James Thompson?
Right.
If anything, this is the one fight thus far in Kimbo's career that makes the most amount of sense. In my opinion, even more sense than a Sean Gannon fight at this point, because Gannon is just such a non-factor in the world of mixed martial arts. Let me quickly ask you, last point on this past weekend. Elite XC, they've got to be happy with the rating they scored. And WEC, on the flip side, an awesome rating as well, doubling their highest rating on Versus. In your mind, which is the most impressive number? Is it, WC what they did on Versus, a network that we all know hardly anyone watches on a regular basis, or Elite XC sort of establishing themselves prime time on a Saturday night on CBS?
For me, there's no question. The WEC, their accomplishments this weekend were far more impressive. Because as you said, they're on Versus, which a lot of people don't get. A lot of people get and don't know they get. It's that kind of obscure thing to begin with. And then, Elite XC, they take a guy from YouTube who's already, has this kind of instant internet success, put him on CBS. That's a no-brainer. As soon as you can make that deal, the ratings are pretty much already done. They didn't even do a ton of marketing work to drum up support for it. They just kind of threw it out there, and it worked. But what the WEC has done is take, fighters that a lot of people haven't been interested in seeing. Really, they do a great job with their marketing of them, do a great job introducing those fighters to fans. They put out these great, video montages. They get them on the web everywhere. I live in New York City, and you walked around the city the week before the fight, and you saw almost no Elite XC ads anywhere, but the subways are just plastered with WEC ads. And the irony was that, Elite XC should have been competing here for ticket buyers in New York City, trying to turn the drum at support. Elite WEC was just trying to get you to watch on Versus because they know you're not going to go to Sacramento and buy a ticket. But they're doing such a great job building that up. And for them to have such a huge show, both in-house and to do so well on Versus and to put on great fights that way, it shows that WEC is putting their faith less in the kind of everybody look over here, instant fame kind of approach to MMA, as opposed to, all right, we're just going to put on good, solid fights, and we have faith that the public is smart enough and interested enough in the sport that they'll realize what we're doing and they'll keep tuning in. And that's paying off, and everyone loves to see that strategy pay off.
Yeah, again, I mean, I'm one of those that I actually like the Elite XC show. I had no problems with it, given what it was, and I do feel a little bad that WEC has been pushed aside. Not that Zuffa or anyone needs more attention, but I'm just it was a really solid accomplishment on their part, and it's too bad that we had to talk about all the nonsense following the Kimbo Slice James Thompson fight, and didn't have all our attention focused on Faber Pulver and Torres's great fight and all that stuff. But again, like you said, a very, very respectable and amazing accomplishment, you can really say, for doubling that rating on Versus. Let's talk about some of the news of this week, particularly just yesterday, Donald Trump officially announcing that he is part of the Affliction promotion. This is one, I really am one of those that I don't have a problem with much going on in mixed martial arts. Gary Shaw doesn't bother me. These promoters don't bother me. All these guys getting involved doesn't really bother me. But for some reason, Trump kind of rubs me the wrong way. I just feel like now that we're getting involved, I just feel like now that we're with now that the Donald Trumps of the world are getting involved, people who don't have the sports background, I don't know. I just feel like it's kind of a dark day for the sport. What's your take on it?
I mean, I think it's a little too simplistic to think, well, okay, when people who don't have a sports background get involved, then we're in trouble. I mean, Gary Shaw has a sports background in boxing, but look at what promoters in boxing have done. It's nothing that MMA really wants to aspire to right now. Donald Trump getting involved, especially since he's getting involved with Affliction, I'm encouraged by that, because what Affliction is doing, I think, is really interesting. And the way they're kind of making themselves a destination for top heavyweights, I'd love to see that. I think that's a good way to build an organization to compete with the UFC, is to get one or two weight classes where you have some of the best guys, draw on those weight classes, and then kind of fill out the rest of the card with smaller guys. I mean, you can only do that for so long, of course, before you have to try and change that strategy. But right now, if you look at that card, it's unbelievable. And the only question was, how long can they do this? How long can they spend this kind of money to pay the Fedors and Tim Sylvias and Andrei Arlovskis and all these people, and Josh Barnett? How long can the bankroll hold up? And to see Donald Trump getting involved with it makes you think, well, maybe that's not such a big issue anymore. I mean, of course, we might have a different story after we see their first show, but looking at that lineup, that's the kind of lineup that you want to see a new MMA company come up with. You don't want to see them come up with Kimbo Slice, who's had three fights, versus James Thompson, who's lost, two in a row via first-round knockout, and try and tell me it's a main event. That tells me that either you don't respect my intelligence, or you're not going after me as a fan. You're going after the people who have heard about MMA on YouTube, and they switch from Kimbo Slice to bum fights without really noticing any difference. But coming up with a card where you have Fedor versus Tim Sylvia, yeah, that tells me you're going after the hardcore fans and that you respect MMA as a serious sport and want people to take it seriously. And if Donald Trump brings his money in there and can stay out of matchmaking or anything like that he doesn't know stuff about, then I'm all for it.
Okay, fine. You convinced me. It's a good idea. Now that I see it that way, you're right. I'm wrong. You know what does piss me off about Affliction, though? The fact that they're holding the fights in a ring. I think that's the stupidest idea. I feel like I know that everyone wants to do something different, but I just think that if you're going to attract the casual MMA fans first and foremost, because we all know that the diehards are going to watch a show like this, and I just think that you need some uniformity. You need people to recognize right. that, oh, this is a cage, especially now that it's been on network television. I just think it's just bad for the sport in general. Do you agree?
You know, I used to be a supporter of the ring, just because in live events it makes it so much easier to, right. to see what's going on and for photography and the cameras. But I think you're right. That I think that does help people make a distinction, that they see that cage and they think, all right, well, this is MMA. And the ring just creates logistical problems, you know, guys getting caught up in the ropes, guys getting pinned corner, that kind of stuff. And I think that that kind of stuff, the branding of a cage kind of, and the problems logistically of a ring make you think, yeah, the cage is kind of the future of it. But at the same time, I can see why some promoters would be wary of the cage. You put something in a cage for some reason, and those old guard sports editors who already don't really want to cover MMA, they see that cage and they feel like, all right, well, that's somehow it becomes instantly more barbaric to them as soon as it's in a cage.
I.e. that guy, I forget, I think his last name, Robinson, from the New York Times. You guys wrote about him.
Right.
He was actually sitting right next to me on press row, and I knew.
Was he watching?
I knew just from his mannerisms, from he looked like that was the last place that he wanted to be in the entire world. And I knew I could bet all the money I had that he was going to write a negative piece. And sure enough, he did. Amazing.
Right. And I mean, that's a problem that we're slowly getting around, you know, that these sports editors and people who don't take MMA seriously, eventually they're either, you know, they retire, or the popular support for MMA becomes so great that they can't ignore it anymore. And I have friends who work at, you know, small town newspapers in America, and just, you know, whenever they try and write an MMA piece about somebody from their area who's become a fighter, I have a friend who works for the Missoulian in Montana, and he tried to write something about Alex Schonauer, who went to Montana State. And the sports editor there, well, I don't know, you know, if we really want to cover this bad stuff, MMA, you know, eventually that's going to, those guys are going to have to either get out of the way or be overrun by the support for MMA. So that doesn't worry me too much. But yeah, sending a guy who doesn't know anything about the sport to cover it, you're guaranteeing yourself a certain type of coverage there. Just like if you send some, you know, diehard Republican to a Barack Obama rally, you're not doing it because you want to have a faithful recounting of events. You know,
right?
It's pretty senseless.
Yeah, of course. All right, well, let's talk about the actual fights themselves, because, like I said, there's a pretty solid card going down in London. UFC 85, the curse card, the card that's has gone through several makeovers in the last couple of months. And I'm actually of the mind that, you know what, after all was said and done, they actually came up with a pretty solid card. Sure, it would have been great to see Liddell Shogun, but I think that in terms of just a purely stacked a card that can, you know, deliver every single fight on the televised portion of it, at least, can all be a fight of the night candidate. I'm actually pretty happy and pretty excited for this card. Do you think that the latest and final version of UFC 85 ended up being better than what we were originally getting?
I don't think it ended up being better. I think
you're just disagreeing with me all day.
What's that?
I said you're just disagreeing with me all day.
well, you know, It's a good card.
Okay.
If it was on Spike TV for free, it would be a great card. But when you ask me to pay $45 for something, then my expectations naturally go up. And I think it's lacking a main event. You know, you have Matt Hughes versus Thiago Alves. I'm not really sure that qualifies as a main event, because, you know, there's no title on the line. The guy who wins is not necessarily, you know, we already know he's not going to turn around and fight for a title right away, because we've got John Fitch and GSP scheduled, so he's at least going to have to wait out the winner of that and maybe fight another time in between then, especially if it's Matt Hughes. We already know he's going to fight Matt Sarah regardless of what happens. And you know, it's not like it's a grudge match. It's not like these guys have seemed like they're on a collision course for a while and we're finally bringing them together. So it's obviously a replacement main event. And so because of that, that's why I don't see it being a great card. It's still good. I'm still going to pay for it, just, you know, because I got to see it. But it's the kind of thing I would love to see on Spike TV. If you're going to have it in London, have the delayed broadcast, all that stuff, and you don't really have a really strong main event, then, yeah, why not make it a free card? But as you said, it is, all those fights on there can be great, especially the televised portion. Marcus Davis and Mike Swick, I'm really looking forward to. Bisping and Day should be also good. So, you know, there's nothing really to complain about. But at the same time, I think you need a really good main event to anchor every card that you put on pay-per-view.
I was kind of, thinking the same thing as you. And then I watched the Countdown to UFC 85 show. And just that little story about Matt Hughes humiliating Thiago Alves in front of some sort of school or seminar following the Spencer Fisher loss. I was like, man, all right, now I want to see them fight because the guy called him out in front of kids.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, I thought that was actually one of the first times in the history of that show on Spike that they actually, I felt like they dropped a nugget on us that we'd even know that helped hype the fight instead of just having Rogan and Dana White, you know, saying, this is amazing, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So I thought that made me but I guess you're right. I mean, I just think that if Thiago wins this fight, I think he should get the winner Fitch and GSP right away. And obviously we know what Hughes is doing next, but I feel like it's sort of like a number one contender, pre-contender fight for Alves. And, you know, if he beats Hughes, then you definitely have to consider him at least in the top three. Do you think that, Matt, I feel like this is the point, like sort of with when Bernard Hopkins fought Jermaine Taylor, lost to him, and then loses again after, you know, an amazing streak of victories. I feel like this is the point where we're about to see Matt Hughes kind of go down in his career and potentially lose two in a row. How do you think this one's going to play out?
You know, I think that Matt Hughes's, you know, reign of terror over the UFC's welterweight division is over. He's no longer the greatest welterweight out there. But at the same time, he does enough things very well that I think he can give Thiago Alves a lot of trouble. I think to beat Matt Hughes, you have to either somehow keep it on the feet, force him to strike with you if you're a better striker, which is what Thiago Alves wants to do, or you have to be a better wrestler than him and better on the ground than he is, which is what George St. Pierre did. I think Alves is a better striker. He's definitely not on par with Hughes' wrestling, and I think, you know, unless he's able to knock Hughes out really early, I think Hughes is going to keep getting him to the mat and keep grinding away on him. And I don't really see him knocking out Hughes early. I think I'm expecting a Hughes decision to be a slow grind and just kind of wearing away at Thiago Alves.
Now, the fight that I'm actually most excited for, you alluded to it earlier, was the Marcus Davis-Mike Swick fight, just because, Davis, his last three fights ended in the first round. Swick, we all know that he loves to end fights quickly. He's coming off a very disappointing performance against Josh Berkman, which was also his debut in the welterweight division. So I think that both these guys have a lot to prove, especially Davis, now that he's kind of stepping up in terms of the caliber of his opponents, and we'll see if he's for real or not. What's your take on Marcus Davis, though? Because a lot of people are starting to slowly get excited about him when, for a while, we just thought he was another one of those, like, second- or third-tier type of fighters. Do you think that a win over Mike Swick can really make him at least a top-five contender in that division?
Absolutely. I think if he goes out there, especially if he finishes Swick, if he goes out there and he can finish Swick, then I think that really says something. It's interesting. I interviewed Marcus Davis recently, and I have a piece on SI today about Marcus Davis. And, you know, you look at him, an ex-pro boxer, one of the few guys who's been able to really make that successful transition from boxing to MMA just by forcing himself to learn everything that was out of his element before. And I think he knows that, you know, right now the UFC's kind of been using him on the UK cards to drum up support. First time he went over there, he was kind of the bad guy, and now the fans there have gotten behind him, and so he hasn't really faced anyone too difficult yet. And Mike Swick is a really good barometer for where he's at right now. And not just as, you know, can he beat Mike Swick, but can he go out there and be the same explosive, aggressive guy from the opening bell against a guy like Mike Swick, who's a smart guy, a tactician. can he do that against Mike Swick as well as do it against those other guys? Can he take the fight wherever it needs to go? If he can, I think that really says something. If he goes out there and he stops Mike Swick, then I think you really have to consider him among the UFC's top five welterweights.
All right, so do you think he will do so?
Now, that's a tougher question.
Yeah.
You know, I think if he can get Swick to play his game, you know, Swick, I think, is feeling like he needs, like you said, that decision against Josh Berkman, it was almost a loss, the way it was considered, you know, a pretty boring fight. Now he feels like he's got to go out there and prove something, prove he belongs there, prove that he's still an exciting fighter, especially the way the UFC is dealing with a lot of their guys. You know, everybody wants to prove that not only can they win, but they can do so in exciting fashion, and that's why they should be kept around. I think that's Mark Davis's best chance, is to get Swick to feel like he needs to stand there and bang it out with him. If he does that, I think Mark Davis will knock him out. If I were Swick's corner man trying to advise him the best way to win the fight, it would be to stay away from Davis early, to frustrate him, to try and pick him apart, take him into the later rounds, and wait for him to get too frustrated to make a mistake. But I think the pressure Swick is feeling, I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's going to try and get in there, you know, wade into the deep water with him right away, and that's where I think he's going to drown. I'm saying late first round, early second round, Davis will finish him.
All right, interesting. Okay, so we'll look out for that. Again, like I said, this card is, you know, filled with quasi-interesting matchups that people like you and me would probably get excited about, maybe not enough to generate a huge buy rate. But the other, in my opinion, the third most important fight on this card is the Verdum-Vera fight. It's already been said that, for all intents and purposes, this is going to be a number one contender shot on the line for the heavyweight title. And it's interesting because at the top of this interview, we were talking about the Affliction show, which is just filled with great heavyweights. And now you have two guys who, one, Vera, is coming off of a loss. The other guy, Verdum, hasn't looked impressive at all in his two UFC fights. And now here they are fighting for a shot at the UFC heavyweight title. Kind of a sad statement on the general landscape of the UFC heavyweight division, but nevertheless, who are you liking in this matchup? Because forgetting about all that other stuff, it does present a pretty intriguing matchup.
You're right. Here's one where, well, I will agree with you wholeheartedly that it is kind of a sad commentary on the state of the UFC's heavyweight division, but at the same time has the potential to be an interesting fight. You know, on paper, you think Verdum has the advantage. He's been in there with big, powerful strikers before and has done fairly well. But I think to think of Brandon Vera that way as just a big striker, I think is a little too dismissive. I think he's got more tools than that, more tools than we've seen. And I think this is the time where he's got to show them. And I think he knows that, you know, that coming off that loss, that injury, he knows he's got to get in there and prove something. And I think he will. I think he can go out there against Verdum. I don't think it's going to be an easy fight at all. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes all three rounds. But I think Vera has more tools than we've seen. I think that he will come out on top of this. I don't necessarily expect him to finish it, but I do think he'll come out with the win. If he doesn't, if he gets dominated on the mat, then I think he's got to move to light heavyweight. I just don't see how he could lose, especially if it's clearly where Verdum just takes him down and dominates him on the mat. I don't see how he could stay at heavyweight after that.
All right, so again, a pretty solid card. I'm not really going to ask your predictions on every one of those because, I don't know, it doesn't really make for compelling radio in my mind. But let me just ask you, what do you think is going to be the fight of the night?
I think Marcus Davis and Mike Swick will be the fight of the night.
Okay, and more importantly, do you think that Ben Goldstein will be puking his guts out at the end of the show?
Man, I hope not. You know,
he seems a little nervous about that whole situation.
Well, yeah. I mean, wouldn't you be?
Yes, I would be, yes.
As soon as I heard they were doing that bet, the only thing that went through my mind was, thank God I'm not a part of it. It sounds really unpleasant. And I was talking with him after the last UFC, and he was saying, you know, it was a great night of fights, but I couldn't enjoy it at all because the entire time I was nervous about, you know, having to drink at the CAC and puke my guts out.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, this is a bet between Ben Goldstein, who obviously also works at CagePotato.com with Ben Folks, and Ryan Harkness of FightLinker.com, where they both predicted the outcomes of UFC 84. The loser would have to drink this Epicac type of substance, and you know, which makes you throw up almost instantaneously. And they ended up a draw. It was a Rashad Evans, Tito Ortiz-like outcome, and now they are doing it over all over again in the spirit of Gary Shaw, and it's going down this Saturday for UFC 85. The big question is, though, how did you dodge that bullet? Why are you not doing it? Because you're kind of like the newbie at Cage Potato, so I figured he would let you do it.
You know, I wondered the same question, and to me, I guess it's because Ben Goldstein has a heart,
okay,
and he didn't want to make me do that. Also, I think the eventual political career that's obviously on my horizon, I think everyone sees that, you know, if I'm going to make senator someday, I can't have videotapes of me throwing up on the internet. And I think we all want to see me make senator. I mean, I just don't know who wouldn't be behind that.
Or you could just say that I'm sure the folks at SI wouldn't be too happy with seeing one of the writers puking their guts out on YouTube.
They probably wouldn't.
Right. Yeah. All right, Ben. Well, thank you very much for the time. As always, great talking with you again. CagePotato.com, probably right now one of my favorite MMA sites out there on the internet, as well as SI.com. Like you said, he's got a great feature up. I haven't even read it yet. You just told me, but I'm assuming that it's a great feature just given your great work at SI.com on Marcus Davis. Ben, enjoy the shows or enjoy the fights, and thanks as always for the time.
No problem. Thanks a lot.